Hey gang, Kevin Strange here.
It's Jeremy Daniels.
And we just want to tell you that for the month of March over at Patreon, we got Jorek and the Shog of Steel in full, commercial free, ready to be heard, the audiobook. And a little later in the month, we'll have Jorek and the Swamp Phantoms of Ik also available to listen to before they air on the Reading to Strangers podcast. There's also discounts for books. My new book, I Died in a Bed of Roses, just came out, and you can get a pre-order discount on that book if you sign up for Patreon.
So if you're getting a Kevin Strange book, you might as well do the $5 of Patreon, because you get the book for about the same price and all this additional content as well.
Plus, you get your name in the dedication page as a special shout out to patrons in the book itself, and much more.
Yeah. Hey Kevin, what do you want to do about this podcast intro
for Reading to Strangers?
Yeah,
I was thinking we download this broody ass music. Then you'd be like, "Read to Strangers." I'd be like, "I don't want to read to strangers." I'd be like, "Read to Strangers." I'd be like, "I don't want to read to strangers." Then I shoot myself in the head.
See, I was thinking more like Reading Rainbow's theme song,
like with LeVar Burton.
Yeah.
Like, take a look, it's in a book, that shit.
Yeah, but like, reading to strangers.
Reading to strangers. Reading to strangers. No, that's a terrible idea.
Hey guys, welcome back to Reading Strangers. My name is Kevin Strange.
I am Jeremy of the River Clan Daniels.
Yes, because it's Barbarian Month.
Yes, it
we
is.
We made it. I didn't think we were going to get here.
What?
We've been talking about this for a while. Things were real stressful in January, mellowed out a bit in February.
Towards the end,
yeah. And we made it to Barbarian Month. It's March.
Yes, it is.
Man, things are like moving at a lightning pace here in Strangeville. Had a lot of work to do this week, and I should have started it 2 weeks ago, but you remember we've been telling you guys that that Will Scar was doing the cover art for my new novel, I Died in a Bed of Roses. He turned that in, but and this is no fault to him. I told him, take your time, take as much time as you need. When I work with cover artists, I try to be as I try to give them as much creative control as possible. And let them work at a pace that they're comfortable with, so that what they turn into me is something that they're proud of. And when the artist is proud of their work, it makes me. I feel like it reflects on the book itself. You know, that cover's so important, and I always work with really talented artists. And I just don't want it to be a rush job. I don't want it to be I want it to be a labor of love. I don't want it to be more, you know, just, I'm going to crank this out real fast and, you know, knock it out and send it to you. And then, we've had covers like that before. I was just counting up how many books we're going to take on the road with us this month.
Oh.
And including the little bitty chappies. We got 17 Kevin Strange books.
Wow, that's a lot.
And we've worked with, you know, a few of the cover artists we've worked with multiple times, but most of the time these are new. You know, I've worked with probably about a dozen artists, and out of all of them, some of them have, you know, turned in really rushed jobs that I wasn't super happy with. But 99% of the time, when we used to run a publishing house, I would always say the artists are way easier to work with than the writers. And this working with Will has been no different. He's been great. He offered great suggestions, and he did
a great job on the cover.
Yeah, he has a specific style of girl that he draws, and so I knew what I was getting myself into, and he really knocked it out of the park. In fact, he had put the main character Maggie, who's on the cover, he had put her in a different pose in his original sketch, and I asked him to change the pose up a little bit. And fuck, dude, he went all in on that,
yeah,
on that pose, and it really, because I told him, like, flare the hair out, have her laying on laying on her back. He had her standing up in the original sketch, and when he laid her down, man, he went all out with it. I'm so happy with it. It's one of my favorite covers, and it's really, you know, you got to compare it to the Strange Sex cover.
Yeah,
you have to, and it's, you know, both of those guys did great jobs in those sexy girls, and I feel like this is a companion piece to that Strange Sex cover. But he just turned that in. All that is to say that he did take a little extra more time than I was comfortable with, because he turned that motherfucker in 3 days ago, and I had to bust ass to get that to get the interior files formatted so that I could send the book off to the printer in time to get it for the con we're going to in
2 weeks.
2 weeks. A little less than 2 weeks by the time this airs on Sunday. It's two Fridays, so 12 days or something.
Something like that.
It takes a little while at the printer. You got to get the whole, you know, because I didn't just order that book. I did a restock of all the books. We're probably going to take around 75 books with us when we go. And since I was kind of in the creation mode last night when I was busting that out, putting the formatting together for the interior art and everything, I just decided to go look at the flyer page, because one of the main things I want to accomplish at this convention is getting the word out about this podcast, Reading to Strangers. And the way that I've always classically done that is to print up a shitload of flyers and flyer the fuck out of cons. And so we haven't done that in 2 years. So I just went to the flyer site that we've always used. I didn't even know if they were still in business. You know, it's been 2 years since I bought a flyer. So I went and I just wanted to look at refresh myself on what the prices were, see if they've changed any, if they had any specials. And I went ahead and did a mock order up to see how much shipping would cost. And it was like shipping, your order, if you order tonight, your order will be received on March 16th.
Thursday before you leave.
In fact, we might, depending on your schedule, we might actually leave out Thursday night to that show, depending on how things work out with you. We could leave Friday, or we could possibly leave Thursday night. So there's a possibility we're going to get a knock on the door, get our package, and fucking get on the road. I mean, that's how this is, little time I actually left for all
pretty
this
tight
stuff.
Tolerances for sure.
So when I saw that on the flyer site, I was like, oh, motherfucker. So I got up, took a piss, and went back to work, and I worked all night getting that flyer done. And again, since I was in creation mode, I also went ahead and did up our banner. You know, that the website we use for the banner is really quick, has a really fast turnaround. But I was like, well, since I'm cranking it all out anyway, so in the last couple of days, I've formatted the new novel, which takes time and patience to do, and also did a two-sided flyer and did our table banner, which is like a 5 by 2.5 is the 5 foot by 2.5 feet is the new banner. It's going to look cool. It's basically a variation of the old show banner we had, but with my ugly ass face there instead of the strange head. And yeah, I'm happy with it.
Awesome.
I'm excited. It's been a long time since I've told people this. I've been doing shows for 11 years, and I've never just gone out as myself. There was always either the movie under the movie production company banner or the book publishing house banner. I'm just going out as Kevin Strange for the first time ever. And it's kind of weird, but at the same time, it's like, maybe it should have always been this way. Maybe I should have always fucking went out like this.
Well, you've always been kind of the figurehead, even for Hack and for the Strange House.
That's what I mean. I probably should have been doing this anyway. So it feels natural. It feels like a natural progression. And I love mocking up this these, you know, designs and stuff. I really enjoy graphic design way more than audio editing, which we did this week because we have a brand new story to debut.
Yes, we do two during Barbarian Month, actually.
Yeah, well, there's actually three. So Barbarian Month might actually end up being 2 months.
Two.
Yeah, we've recorded two, but there's a third story that's, I think, even going to be longer than the second story. So we may end up having a 2 month long Barbarian Month.
Can't keep barbarians in a corner, I guess.
Before we get into all that, though, you were telling me before we went on the air that you recently got a tooth pulled.
Yeah, I thought I had a cap loose. Yeah, I got to the dentist. It was last Tuesday, and they asked me, you know, which cap's loose, and I grabbed it, and I said, oh, this one, wiggled it, and when I wiggled it, it wasn't a cap loose, my tooth was broke, the cap was glued onto it. About 3 years ago, I fought a guy that was 100 pounds heavier than me, and he hit me in the side of the face so hard that I had blood coming out from around that too, so I just assumed that's when it broke, but it already had a cap on it and a steel post, so they gave me Tylenol 3s, and I'm hypersensitive to any kind of pharmaceuticals, so my daughter saw me Tuesday and was laughing. She thought I stayed home from work to get drunk, and I was like, nah, I did. Apparently, I told her they're growing my tooth in the lab and just kept laughing, so yeah, I'm pretty entertaining on them. I don't need much else.
So he punched you in the tooth so hard it cracked your tooth in
it? Yeah, well, after that fight, it was bleeding around my tooth, even in my mouthpiece. And he actually punched me 3 times consecutively real hard. And it's when I just kind of went into a blind rage because my bell was rung and tried to throw a guy that was 380 pounds. And at the time, I thought I just didn't get it. I didn't pick him up. But I did actually throw him when you look at the video and he caught his ankle in the cage.
Wow, that's what stopped him?
Yeah, dead stopped him. And apparently when you're bent over in half and you dead stop 100 pounds heavier than your body weight, it don't go well. So
a lot of people don't know that about you,
but
we do a lot of talking about me. We don't do a lot of talking about you, that you're a cage fighter.
I was. I don't really do it anymore, so being 41,
I thought you were a badass for, I mean, you were like 38 when you got into it. I mean, that's pretty late in the game to be jumping into.
Well, yeah, but I wrestled in high school and college, so.
And you're a big ass motherfucker, so.
Is it out? That always helps. But anyway, so what else is in the news for?
Well, I wanted to tell my own Tylenol 3 story. I almost told you this story when we came in from eating, but I wanted to go ahead and just throw it on the podcast because I think it's a funny story. So back in high school, we had this gay teacher. He was a honors English teacher, and he would later go on to get fired for having an affair with an underage student.
I know the teacher you speak.
Before that happened, he enjoyed having parties at his house, and he would invite students over. Male students, specifically.
Hmm.
The female students could come, too, but he very much liked to have the senior... It was mainly seniors in his honors courses that would come over on the weekends and party over there. Well, he had foot surgery. He had both of his feet operated on. He was an older cat. And they prescribed him Tylenol 3s. And since... This is the 90s, so if the things I'm talking about sound weird, you have to understand that this was the last era of the non-PC world where things like this, the faculty would basically just be like, yeah, well, you know, what are you going to do? Oh, he gives drugs to kids. That sucks. But he's a really good teacher.
At that time, I mean, they still don't really kind of care if guys, you know, have those issues in high school. It's mostly girls.
Can I tell this story?
As long as you don't mention names, I'm thinking it'll be all right. We're not trying to sell them out or anything like that.
I mean, this was a long time ago. This was 20 years ago.
Yeah, and I'm sure you can tell it. There's no way you can get in trouble for it because it's been more than 7 years. Been more than 7 years since you turned 18.
I think I was 18 at the time. Okay. I didn't graduate high school until I was 19, so I think I was 18th time. Not that it matters.
7th grade was a motherfucker, wasn't it?
Not that it matters. I was a shitty high school student. I dropped out that's a whole other story. I dropped out a whole year of high school and had to make it up. So I graduated a year late. Somehow I got really uncomfortable telling this story all of a sudden because it's like really illegal. Like what I'm talking about is really illegal. So he ends up getting Tylenol 3s after his foot surgery. I guess I'm just going to fucking power through this story and hope that everything...
Or I'll make up one. He gives you one. Next thing you know, there's a air horn in your butthole.
So, no, it didn't go there. So I didn't have his class. I didn't have honors English, but I did have a photo class. And, yeah.
I'm just imagining where this is going. It's probably not going to be as cool as what I'm imagining. Go on, keep going.
No. So photo class has a field trip to the zoo. And me and a couple of the other guys from photo that knew the teacher decided that as we were heading out to the buses, we ran up to his class and begged him for Tylenol 3s. He gave them to us, of course, because we were dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And I took 3 Tylenol 3s. And then when we got to the... And they hadn't kicked in yet. When we got to the zoo, we went into the bathroom at the zoo, and the same 3 guys, the 3 of us, smoked a joint in the bathroom stall. And right as I started smoking, like right as the high hit me from the weed, the 3 Tylenol 3s hit me. And I was so fucked up. I couldn't feel my feet touching the ground as I walked around, and everybody's taking pictures of shit. I couldn't conceptualize what a camera was and what the hell I was supposed to be doing with it. I was trying so hard to look at what other people were doing.
So high, you're almost in another dimension where nothing made sense.
I was so high, I was in the dimension that cameras didn't make sense. And I ended up taking some okay pictures, but they weren't, you know, I mean, I basically ruined my film roll by just being ridiculously fucked up. And
a lot of pictures of your shoes.
I remember I was so high. That was probably 11:30 in the morning when that was all going on. At 6 o'clock at night, I don't remember any of the rest of the school day. I remember coming to somewhere around 6 o'clock at night and going, I'm still fucking high. 7 hours later, I was still fucked up, and I ended up going to bed early. Like, well, I don't think this is going to wear off today. So I went to bed early that night. So the lesson to be learned here is don't take 3 Tylenol 3s and smoke weed with it when you're an 18-year-old fucking 160-pound kid, because I'll fuck you up. I'll fuck your world up. It's probably not advisable. I don't think I had ever taken Tylenol 3s ever at any point in my life. I don't think I knew what I was, you know, because it was Tylenol 3 with codeine. I don't think I had any idea what the fuck I was in for. And, you know, again, shame on the teacher for, like, 50-something
providing his students with opium.
Yeah, I don't think you're allowed to tell those stories.
It's past the... fucking, I've had a brain
statute of limitations. There you go. Statute of limitations?
Yeah.
I guess. With the internet age, I just don't think there's any such thing. I mean, he got fired a long time ago. It's not like I don't even know if he's still alive. Come to think of it, he'd be in his 70s if he was still alive.
Well, yeah.
He's probably got a lot bigger problems than me talking on a podcast without even using his name or any details. There's a few people listening to this who know who I'm talking about, though, like you. You know what I'm talking about. Still friends with his underage lovers. That's a story in and of itself, man. He and his gay lover, the teacher, and he had a gay lover his own age that he lived with, their partners, in the era before gay marriage was legal, or they would probably have been husbands. Is that what you call it?
Yeah, husbands? I would assume, unless one wants to be called a wife. You know how this shit is nowadays.
So they were having a three-way relationship with this kid, and it had been going on for like 2 years. And it was one of those fucking things, man, where they decided to break up with him, and it was one of those revenge things where he went after his job and like went to the police and filed a report and all this malicious stuff just to fucking make sure he got fired. And he got fired.
Well, he tend to.
So that story got real sad real fast. I don't know why I wanted to tell that story. I really only wanted to tell the part about how I went to the zoo high, but I guess part of the story is...
The good part of the story is that you were getting fed these narcotics by somebody who thought your butthole looked good. Allegedly.
I have more stories about him, but I think that's plenty for today. We're about 20 minutes into the show now.
All right, anyway, let's cut to the first part, and then...
Well, I kind of wanted to explain what this...
We can do that afterwards.
...story even... Like, where this character came from and all this stuff. I had a whole whole nother show. We ended up talking about...
I'm still waiting for my bars from your rap career.
Cody, no. No.
Well, tell them what they're in store for real quick, and then we'll get in detail afterwards.
So this story, the first word, the kickoff story for the month, is actually the most recent Jorek story on the timeline. Now, Jorek is my barbarian character, Jorek the Barbarian. And he is a silver-haired barbarian, you know, your standard barbarian. But he carries around a magic sword with him called the Moonblade. And it has magical powers. And in this story, as you will see here, as you listen to the story, something very bizarre happens to the sword in this story. And that's sort of where I want the character to be. Like, when I write Jorek novels and stories, I want him to be in this state that he's in right now. But this story didn't tell me enough about who Jorek or any of his companions were. So what I've been doing to celebrate Barbarian Month is I've been writing prequel stories to the Jorek character. Stories that take place back when he still just had his regular sword. And his sword was still magical back then, but I don't want to spoil what happens in this first story until after it's over with. But so that's where the other stories come in. But this was the first Jorek story that I wrote, so I wanted to present it first in Barbarian Month. The inspiration, and I want to talk about that. Maybe we'll talk about the inspirations for Jorek next episode. We've done plenty, or maybe after the
break. We're going to be talking about Jorek for a bit. So, yeah.
So well, after the break, we'll get out of here and kick off part one of Jorek of the Shoggoth Steel. And for those of you listening saying, I know what a Shoggoth is. Yeah, Shoggoths are from Lovecraft, the Lovecraft world, the Cthulhu mythos. Shoggoths are the shape-shifting slaves of the Old Ones that I believe we first meet Shoggoths in the novella At the Mountain of Madness. But he talks about Shoggoths in several of his tales. And of course, they've been written extensively about in the larger Lovecraft mythos throughout time after that. So I wanted to combine, I'm not certainly not the first, and I certainly won't be the last, but I wanted to combine the Lovecraft mythos with the sword and sorcery genre because H.P. Lovecraft and Robert E. Howard, Lovecraft is the creator of the Cthulhu mythos, and Robert E. Howard, as we talked about on the show before, is the creator of the Conan the Barbarian, who is popularized the sword and sorcery genre. So again, that's another reason to do this story first, is it segues our Lovecraftian month of February with our sword and sorcery barbarian month of March. So this story is kind of a bridge, building a bridge between sword and sorcery and Lovecraftian stuff. And we have cool stuff. I'm going to talk about Robert E. Howard and his weird life and stuff. I want to talk about Frank Frazetta, who popularized the Conan. He popularized sword and sorcery novel covers, specifically Conan books, but a bunch of other stuff too. And we'll talk about all kinds of fun stuff this month.
Awesome.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and kick it over. We will see you guys on the other side. Enjoy part one of Jorek and the Shoggoth Steel. What's up, you reader fucks? My name's Kevin Strange.
And this is Travis.
And we're here from the Watching with Strangers podcast, because there's other things in the world besides books, too, you bookish fucks. We review cult movies. What kind of cult movies do we review, Travis?
All kinds of cult movies.
Like what?
Cultists of the cult, including Cult from the Future.
Cult movies from the future at kevinthestrange.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever other podcasts fuck, you fucks. Jorek and the Shoggoth Steel, written by Kevin Strange. Read by Kevin Strange. Recorded at Castle Daniels. The Lich's hair was as red as a devil's dick. Jorek watched her from behind the red rocks as she crept through the valley in the fading light. Stupid Lich, he thought. Her decomposing flesh stunk so bad, Jorek would have been able to track her from 200 paces, let alone the mere 20 he put between them on this day. The Lich turned, casting a tentative glance behind her. Even in death,
the woman still retained some of her beauty. In life, she must have been a magnificent creature to behold. The filthy rags she wore did little to hide her dead body's curves. Her right breast hung full and still quite perky. Her left had been obliterated by some sharp object, no doubt intended for her heart. This wound was probably what ended the lich's mortal life. Be it by foe, friend, or self-inflicted, Jorek didn't know. This wound left her breast neatly cleft in two halves, directly through the nipple, almost giving the impression of three breasts hanging from her chest instead of two. The center of the two halves of breast meat was a dark black hole which spiraled out into spider-webbing cuts. Jorek should have been disgusted, but the soft, fair features of what was left of her face, wide hips, round ass, and her three tits, combined with that red hair, made him strongly aroused. The thick barbarian shook his head to clear his lustful thoughts. His shoulder-length white hair tussled back and forth. He wasn't here to fuck. He was here to kill the stinking lich for what she'd done to him and his warriors. He jumped over the red boulder, hiding him from view down into the valley, landing solidly, his furry thermskin boots absorbing the impact. He'd slain the awful beast with his own hand, making the sturdy footwear for himself and his band of mercenaries. The pair of thick straps crisscrossing his barrel chest and the thin loincloth covering his sex were procured from the same many-horned monster. Indeed, the creature's horns jutted out this way and that from the tops of his nearly knee-high boots, and he wore a necklace of the blood-stained things around his enormous neck.
"Wench!"
Jorek yelled, standing straight up, sticking his sweat-drenched chest out.
"Return my people at once, and I shall grant you a swift death."
Three tits turned at the same moment Jorek reached for his sword with his right hand. The lich's rags billowed from the motion, revealing a huge, muscled right arm, hastily sewn to where her own should have been. The telltale leather bands around the bicep and the wrist adorned with thermskill horns made true what Jorek had just discovered. When he reached for his sword, he felt neither blade nor arm. The pain hit him like a Gorok running with all six legs. He looked down, gape-mouthed, blood crusted over the same type of crude stitching that now held his arm affixed to the lich. When he looked up, the lich had cleared the distance, standing now face to putrid, half-missing face.
You took this?
Three tits grabbed Jorek's sex through his loincloth with his own right arm. Still reeling from the sudden realization that his limb was stolen from him, Jorek flinched backward. But the lich did not release her grasp. Strangely, even through the pain, the noxious odor the lipless creature emitted through her decaying mouth only inches from him, and the fact that it was his own hand gripping his tenderest parts, Jorek could not help but become further aroused. Be it from the weird circumstances or the natural beauty under the living corpse's necropsy, he could not be certain. Worse, the barbarian realized that he could still feel with his dismembered appendage. He was not in control of its movement, but nevertheless felt the sensation of his soft, veiny bulge being stroked by his missing hand. As Jorek became fully erect inside his own grip, three tits lightly touched his face with her female hand and leaned in close, whispering, "This is my power. I
am death. I decide what you feel and when you get to die. How about I rip your head off and make you suck your own cock?
Jorek furrowed his brow. He was Jorek, son of Jorek the Mighty Moon King. He would not be spoken to in such a manner. He had slain an entire flock of winged Gengo in the Tylek forest with but a single quiver of arrows, during the Rengalho beast mating season at that. The barbarian spotted his sword under the lich's dirty robes slung across her back. With his remaining arm, he snatched the blade, flipped it in the air, caught it with the blade pointing downward, and ran the lich through before she had time to react. She screeched, releasing his member, and collapsed to the ground, her fiery red hair covering her face. Black blood ejected from her mouth, and she wailed, covering Jorek's prized possession. His moonblade glowed with a hint of blue, even as it was defiled with the stink of the undead, its beauty crying out to be saved from the clutches of the Forsaken. Jorek's father's father's father had seen the molten steel as it came crashing down to the ground in a great ball of blue fire. A blacksmith by trade, Jorek the Elder forged the sky metal into the greatest blade to ever slay a Nagmora. Its edge needed never to be sharpened. No substance was safe from its killing strike. Jorek himself had inherited it from his father after the king's unfortunate poisoning from the bite of a rabid Zill when they were adventuring together in the far-off forests of Zor. The Zill made King Jorek mad with disease. Jorek the Junior was forced to strangle him to death with the thorny vines of a reek tree lest he be attacked and poisoned as well, thus giving him full rights to the Moonblade. Three Tits' wails continued as Jorek lectured the lich about his hereditary right to the special blade when the creature's shoulders started to bounce up and down, and her wailing suddenly turned to laughing. With Jorek's left hand, she grabbed the blade, instantly slicing it down to the bone. Jorek's lecture ended instantly. He winced in pain, pawing at the empty space where his hand would have been had it still been connected to his body. To his horror, the lich woman stood fully upright, yanking the blade from her wound. "You big, dumb oaf. You have no idea the power this metal possesses." As if to accentuate her point, the blade began to vibrate, glowing brighter and brighter until the once perfectly straight sword began to fold and wave like a flag in a strong wind. "Sorcery!" Jorek yelled, shielding his eyes as the blade's shimmer increased. Squinting through his hands, he staggered back and fell to his knees at what he saw. His precious moonblade was melting. The blade liquefied, covering Three Tits' hands and arms in shimmering blue liquid metal. The metal crawled up her shoulders, across her cleaved chest, finally covering her face and legs until the entire lich was encased inside the moonblade metal, save for her luscious red hair. Jorek cried out in confusion as the shape of the lich began to change. She grew taller, her mouth wider, filling with metal fangs. Her hands tripled in size, and her fingers became long talons. Insect-like legs grew from her back as her own legs fused together, forming a thick trunk which split in two and curled up over her head and back around, ending in sharp, spiked tails. The barbarian fell backwards, turned, and scrambled to his knees, trying to find purchase, but succeeded only in falling over something blocking his path. Jorek turned his head to see, to his horror, that he tripped over the carcass of Aurelius, his most trusted commander, the man whom Jorek had fucked and killed with for nigh on 20 cycles. Aurelius's eyes had been gouged out, and behind them Jorek could see that his brain was gone, his head an empty husk, as though its contents had just been sucked out. Glancing around, the barbarian shuddered in disbelief. Strewn all over the valley were the dismembered remains of his entire group. Across the way was Nirod, the half-shaved giant gorilla man Jorek had always counted on to breach any fortification his crew came across. Now he lay with his shaved half propped neatly against a rock, bleeding out his life's blood onto his hairy half, cleaved neatly down the middle. Over there lay Trina, the sole female in the group. She'd proven to be the stealthiest of assassins when she was able to sneak up on and apply a blade to both his and Aurelius's throats while they both enjoyed a bar wench with a huge ass so wide it was able to accommodate both men's cocks. She solidified her place at Jorek's side when she joined in, proving her sexual appetite for big bar wench asses to be more than Aurelius and himself combined. Her ornately braided hair had been torn from the scalp, along with the skin from every limb and both her tits. Flayed. Alive. Jorek closed his eyes. He hadn't the time to mourn them, but he would live to avenge them. He swore silently to the most savage of his gods. Jorek felt a pinch and pressure in his chest. Suddenly, he was high above the ground, kicking his feet and swinging his remaining arm. He looked down and saw the metallic appendages poking out of his ruptured skin. He was skewered like a human shish kebab. Further pain throttled any attempt of escape as the three-titted metal monster sunk its claws next to where its tails already penetrated Jorek's large frame. The barbarian wheezed through punctured lungs, unable to even scream as unrelenting agony bombarded his shocked senses. The monstrosity pulled Jorek close, breathing boiling hot breath next to his ear.
Save your friends, barbarian. They need you.
That's when Jorek heard their voices. Looking out across the valley, Jorek found it in himself to scream. Despite the severity of his wounds, all of his men were somehow alive, somehow in pain, all moaning his name, reaching for him with gnarled limbs and stumps dripping fresh blood as if they'd only just been cut down in that instant.
Jorek! Jorek! Jorek!
Save them, barbarian! Kill them! The metal beast whispered. Release them from their suffering!
I, Jorek labored, his mouth filling with blood. I cannot!
With that, the monster flexed her limbs and ripped Jorek into thick, bloody pieces, dropping him amongst the living corpses of those he held closest in this mortal life. The dead dragged themselves toward his chunks, moaning his name in maddening rhythm. As they descended on him, shoving his gory pieces into their mouths, he could not move, could not defend himself, could not scream, could not die. The barbarian woke screaming. His blood boiled, sweat drenched his body. It took several moments to gather his bearings. He was still in the canyon, taking ragged breaths. He felt across his midsection, finding it intact. He breathed a sigh of relief. It had been a dream, a fever dream. His memories flooded his mind. The Lich, yes, she was real. She had attacked his mercenaries as they marched home in victory after vanquishing the cruel wizard Haramond for his atrocities against the bird people of Dorchunchun. Their king had paid a hefty ransom for the head of Haramond, and Jorek's warriors meant to spend every last coin of it. still drunk on mead and wench from the night before, the pack of barbarians fell victim to the lich woman as they sang songs and washed cock at the River Rickendale. The images of his men being struck down in an instant by the powerful witch swam across Jorek's fever-pickled mind. He still heard their screaming as the red-headed demoness single-handedly broke them one by one, maiming them where they stood while Jorek watched helplessly from the middle of the river. One moment he dunked his head beneath the waves to wash his hair, the next, before he could even wipe the water from his eyes, half his men already lay in bloodied heaps at the river bank. By the time he drew the moonblade from its sheath upon his back and waded to shore, the others had been similarly incapacitated. Not killed, no. They each lay with broken back, shattered knee, twisted neck, or other such malady that rendered them helpless, but very much alive. Jorek pointed the moonblade at the lich as he climbed out of the river.
I'll have your head for this, wench, and all three of your tits.
That was the end of his memories. A yawning blackness lay between that moment and this, revealing none of its secrets. The barbarian tried to get up, but felt an enormous weight tug against him. The arm the lich had stolen in his fever dream. Panicking again, he reached out tentatively, fearing what he might or might not find. His fingertips rested on cold metal. Jorek looked down. Even in the dark, cold valley night, the moonlight reflected off the steel, giving it a blue glow. The moonblade! But how could that be? The shape that dug into his body, that penetrated his skin at various jagged, tendril-like points, was gigantic. Thick as a barrel, Jorek looked on, astonished and sick to his stomach as he traced the hulking piece of twisted metal with his eyes. There must have been 10 feet of steel grafted to his shoulder where his right arm should have been. He tried again to stand, but that only caused the heavy metal to dig deeper into his flesh. Trapped like a rabid whelk, he groped around on the ground with his free hand, finding a thick stone. Without another thought, he bashed it against the point of connection between flesh and steel, sending excruciating pain through his shoulder and clanking off the metal hard enough to create a vibration that only exacerbated the agony. Sweating away whatever fluid remained in his body, again and again he smashed the rock off his arm, yanking against the metal, ignoring the pain until exhaustion and fever claimed him.
And we're back.
Holy shit.
So, that's Jorek. Get a little taste.
Yep.
A little taste. We got some shenanigans going on. We got a lich.
Three-tit lich.
Three-tit lich with fiery red hair.
Actually two, but one split in half.
I met a girl.
With three tits?
One of my friend's friends. So one of my female friends. She had a friend who dyed her hair fire engine red. And on Facebook, my female friend remarked to her friend, "Your hair's as red as the devil's dick." And I was like, I gotta use that in a book sometime. That's gotta be the first line of a book that I do. So when I was writing Jorek and the Shoggoth Steel, I have a thing for redheads, if you didn't know.
Kind of catching on.
A little bit of a thing. So this is a lich with hair as red as the devil's dick. And she's a little sinister. I write all the way, you go all the way back through my through the Hack Movies catalog, and I have an obsession with female villains. There's something, I don't know what it is inside me, but whatever I write, very often,
because Kevin Strange is a woman hater,
very often the antagonist in my fiction ends up being female. And Jorek and the Shoggoth Steel is no different.
Patriarchy.
No different. Let me think. In the other one, no. In the other one, the females. See, I'm kind of pissy right now. I don't really like the direction of the popular culture in this country, and I've had feminism shoved in my face for so long that my writing is kind of turning more towards a purposefully chauvinistic, just because we're not.
I don't know.
We're not.
You just still do the standard Kevin Strange strong female. I mean, if you look, even you know. Not just the villains, but even the good one. I don't know if we've covered.
She hasn't appeared yet, but there is a character, one of Jorek's soldiers. Her name is Trina. She's a strong female character. But the next story we're going to do, Jorek and the Swamp Phantoms of Ik, I kind of went out of my way to make it more of a male-centric. Even though, yes, I do. They are an egalitarian team of different races and different genders, and they all treat each other as equals because of merit. They have an equal opportunity to perform, not an equal outcome based on some government entity telling people, you know, who's racist and who's oppressed and who are oppressors. And I've always had that in everything I've done. I've always had an egalitarian bend to my stuff. I don't know where I was going with that. But anyway. I was saying that when I wrote
female villains
back when I wrote this, I was still very much pushing that egalitarian ideology, and so as you'll see as this story plays out, we'll talk next week after the finale of Jorek and the Shoggoth Steel more about that. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about where this character came from. There's a lot of influences clearly that go into Jorek the Barbarian. Of course, I grew up watching the Arnold Schwarzenegger Conan movies and Red Sonja and that whole barbarian movie genre. But are you familiar with the animated Lord of the Rings movies by Ralph Bakshi?
Yes.
Did you ever see those?
Yes.
Well, Ralph Bakshi teamed up with Frank Frazetta, who I was talking about before the break, who had popularized the oil painting, strong, muscular Conan sword and sorcery covers, and there's been many Frazetta imitators have come.
Everybody
since.
From He-Man. I mean, He-Man looks like the Conan from those paintings. I mean,
well,
almost any guy with a sword and a loincloth.
Bakshi and Frazetta teamed up in the 80s, and they did an animated feature film called Fire and Ice. And one of the things that Bakshi did for that Lord of the Rings...
Song of Fire and Ice?
No, it's just Fire and Ice. One of the things Bakshi did with the Lord of the Rings movies was he shot the Orc army live action on video and then rotoscoped the animation over them in the final product. And he liked that enough that when they did Fire and Ice, they shot it. They shot the actors on video, and they fucking had Frank Frazetta.
Do the rotoscoping?
Do the rotoscoping. So you get these... It's an animated Frank Frazetta, Ralph Bakshi collaboration. And it is, of course, just about a barbarian that's hunting. And since it's Frazetta, the girls have big asses, wearing lots of thongs and little skimpy tops, doing a lot of bending over with their little Frank Frazetta love handles. The little curves, the Frazetta girls. There's a documentary.
Sir Mix a Lot have a lot in common.
There's a documentary on Frazetta that's on Amazon. You can rent it for like $3 or $4. Called "Painting with Fire," and one of his friends remarks Frazetta had asked him in passing, like, "Do I always draw all my girls like this?" And he's like, "I played stupid, because I didn't want to be the first person to tell Frank Frazetta, yes, Frank, you draw girls with fat asses." But that's one of the things. I'm a big butt lover, for those of you that don't know.
So you can't lie.
That's one of the things that drew me to Frazetta's work as a kid. I didn't know who the fuck he was. I didn't know any of the stuff I know now.
Drew all of us males to the Conan.
Those big butt girls, right?
Well, I meant just that artwork and that style bled out all there. And no matter what your proclivities are, there's something for both. I mean, people give him a lot of guff because he makes sexy women. But the dude that's completely muscular, I mean, I'm sure there's not a lot of girls like, ew, that's gross. His body's so hard and muscular.
He was very good at drawing muscular dudes. He was very good at drawing monsters. But ain't nobody draws a fat ass like Frank Frazetta. So anyway, I saw the Fire and Ice movie, and back she did another cool movie called Wizards. Did you ever see that? The
animated Wizards movie? I kind of remember Wizards.
It's a cool flick. So the Conan movies, Fire and Ice. You mentioned the He-Man cartoon. Of course, I'm a child of the 80s, so I had He-Man figures and watched the He-Man cartoon. But there was another cartoon in the early 90s that is a very heavy influence on Jorek. And that they actually did a Conan series called Conan the Adventurer. And he fought a... there was this Set, the Snake God, had a little minion here on Earth named Rathamon. And Rathamon had a bunch of snake minions that worked for him. And Conan had a sword made of star metal. And every time he got near the snake men, the star metal would glow, and they would... my roommate's taking a bath in the middle of our podcast. What was I saying?
Star metal.
He had star metal that would glow when he came in proximity with the snake people. And so the snake people look like normal people until they get in contact with that star metal, and then they would reveal their snake selves. Mm. And when he slayed them with his sword made of star metal, they would disappear back to Set's dimension, Set the giant snake god's dimension. So that was a really cool show. I used to come home from school when I was in junior high and always watch Conan the Adventurer. So one of the reasons that Jorek has this moon steel, as we know it right now. Mm. It obviously is going to be called the Shoggoth steel at some point in the story, but not where we've gotten yet. And if you know what Shoggoths are, you have a good idea of what's happening with this sword. But right now, Jorek knows it as moon steel, that a piece of the moon crash landed on Earth, and his grandfather forged this moon rock into the blade that he wields, and all of that is a, like I said, it's a very strong homage to Conan the Adventurer, but also all those other
which, for the record, didn't have the big butts I was looking.
Just no, Conan the Adventurer does not have
standard cartoon.
Standard, very
Hanna Barbarian.
Yeah. So. When I set out to do my own version of this, because I had written, I've written books about vampires, I've written stories about werewolves, I've written zombies, I've written all kinds of weird stuff. Like I've got big, so many different.
Okay, you ignore big robotic overlord Obama.
Well, that's my zombie book, right?
Oh yeah,
Robot Apocalypse. He fights zombies. So yes, I write giant robots. I have another robot book also called Computer Face that's about robot overlords, and I've written about giant bugs. I've written about all kinds of stuff, but I had never but I had never done a sword and sorcery story before. And I was asked to write a story for an anthology that I eventually got kicked out of, but we won't go into the reasons why I got kicked out of it. I will say it had nothing to do with the editor for that for said book. He was he very much liked Shoggoth, Jorek and the Shoggoth Steel, which at the time I was calling Lich Tits. But I wanted to. He asked me to write a sex story for an anthology, and I decided that I was going to take sword and sorcery, mix it with Lovecraft, but also throw really hardcore sex stuff into it too. And I wanted to take a really and not that it's never been done before. There's been really weird takes on sword and sorcery. There's every kind, people have been writing sword and sorcery since the fucking 1930s. So it's almost the genre itself is almost 100 years old. Ain't nothing hasn't been done. I'm not saying that Jorek is original in theme. Thematically, it follows weird Lovecraftian sword and sorcery. But I wanted to put a really strong Kevin Strange twist on it, so I made it really perverted, on top of being, you know, just bizarre and weird and having.
Oh, it's still bizarre and weird, perverted. When we get into next week's, you know, little teaser for next week, There's one scene specifically that's kind of weird.
Yeah, there's sexual. A lot of
weird sexual.
Hasn't that already happened? That's already happened. She's cut his arm off. And jerks him off with his own, arm. Yeah, that's why I said I wanted to do really weird things with it. So yeah, I have the Lich actually dismember Jorek's arm and jack him off with his own hand. Which, you know, it's not uncommon for dudes to feel their own junk, but when their arm is attached to a woman and they're jerking themselves off.
When you jerk your own self off, it doesn't feel like a hand job. But when somebody else is jerking you off with your hand.
That's the kind of weird stuff I want to do with this series. See what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of Kevin Strangities I can inject into this. And at the time, I was laughing like I am now when I was thinking this story up.
Pretending that there was a lich in your room that had your arm to.
Well, that's not unlike how Robert E. Howard wrote his Conan stuff. But I don't know if we should talk about that. I don't know if we should talk about that this week or next week. We'll save it. Robert E. Howard next week. No, we still got. We can roll on for about 7 more minutes to fill up an hour. So, what do you want to talk about?
I mean, there's a lot of stuff we can talk about. You already kind of said where this came from and its origins, but any of the characters so far besides Lich Tits and Jorak himself really covered.
We didn't listen to exactly where the story stops before we did this week, and I say this every week.
Yeah, well, we kind of know. I mean,
we know where it's at, but it's like there's a point where, yeah, because remember they all tell him that they're all dismembered, but they're still dragging themselves towards.
Yeah, I mean,
that all happens before he gets stuck up on the ridge. So yeah, we meet Aurelius.
Then their second story towards the end of this month. I think a lot of people are going to be shocked with Aurelius. I guess when we went over it, recording it, if there is any hints to what he's like, I totally missed him. And then we were doing the Swamp Phantoms of it, and he's really starting describing him, and I'm like, okay, all right, yeah, I didn't, you know, I'm trying to sit there quietly while you're reading, and reading everything for the first time is always interesting.
Yeah, especially when you're hearing me record something you haven't read, because I had just, we'll talk about that when it gets time for that story, but I literally finished it the day we recorded it, so nobody had read it, nobody's ever heard it, so that's I've had this story out in my, All the Toxic Waste from My Heart short story collection, which I released last September, and I also featured Jorek and the Shoggoth Steel as a free story on KevinTheStrange.com. So some people will already be familiar with this particular Jorak story, but the next two stories that we're going to do have never been seen or heard by anyone except me and Jeremy so far. So
now the third I haven't even seen
it. Yeah, Jorak and the Black Wall. I still have to work on it. I haven't been able to work on it this week. Man, I've been so fucking busy. excuse me, putting all the finishing touches on our con adventure. This is going to be so fun.
Yes, it is.
You know, this
will be the hotel room.
Huh?
Did you get the hotel room?
No, I haven't got the hotel room yet. I haven't had. I haven't had time, but I certainly have had time. I just haven't done it. We'll figure. You know, if we have to cuddle up in my car, we'll be fine.
We're taking your car.
We'll burn. We're taking your car.
I don't know.
I'd rather take your car, brother. We got to take a car.
In Cincinnati, what's that? 6 hours away.
Yeah.
Your car making 6 hours?
Well, one of them might.
Oh yeah, I forgot you have a couple of them. You got a couple to choose from.
They're neither one of them are in very good condition.
We'll probably take my car. Then.
I think the little green one could make it, but I'd feel more comfortable in your car.
We could take my bike.
Yeah, let's ride your fucking motorcycle.
Can they fit everything in a backpack?
Try to fit the whole table in a backpack. That'd be hilarious.
Definitely be an entrance.
So next week, we might have a special guest. So we are recording this on Saturday, the night before we actually air it. It'll air tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time. And there's a possibility that tonight, there's UFC tonight, we're going to have some people over and we're going to watch the fights. There's a possibility that a Hack Movies alumni might be making an appearance. And if he does, I want to get him on the podcast and do a little interview with him. So there's a there's a possibility that next week we'll feature a small interview with a Hack Movies personality. So that'll...
It's got to be a he. Why can't we get girls in these fights?
We could call Katie again if you want to.
No, I'm saying the fights.
Oh, for the fights? Chicks don't like to fight. I invite girls to the fights. They're just like, meh. Meh.
But there's a stunning company. A writer.
Stunning company.
A fighter.
Yeah, and a guy in a bathtub.
Yeah, that's been in it like the whole time, even before we started. Starting to have questions.
So next week we're going to possibly have a guest star. And Jorak and the Shog of Steel Part 2. The finale, mm-hmm. even. What will Jorak do? Will he survive the attack of the Lich that he calls Three Tits? I guess we'll find out. Next week, gang. Do you have anything else, Jeremy?
No, I think we got to...
I can't think of anything else. Yeah, blew my load in that first 20-minute segment.
Well, that... I always find it hard right in the middle of the story because, you know, the way I remember things, I don't remember what happened before this or that. I don't sure. keep that kind of detail.
I mean, non-linear memory.
Yes. So... Other than that, I think we if we got enough time, then we'll do this one, and then maybe have the special one later.
Yeah, we got a lot of cool website stuff that's going to happen this
week. Oh, yeah, we should probably tell them about that.
We're going to do... I haven't figured out... I haven't decided exactly which story to put up for the free story, but we got... I think we're on, like, chapter 5 of Vampire Guts in Nuketown that hits this month.
Getting good.
We have, of course, over on the Patreon, we have we just put up all of, you know, if you listen to the first part of this story and don't want to wait a week to hear the second part, you can sign up for Patreon and listen to the whole thing
just
right now.
$1.
For $1 a month. That's live and up there. What else is going on the website this month? I talked about we're going to do that Barbarian top 7 favorite Barbarian movie list is going to go up, and we'll do a short story. I haven't decided exactly which one I want to do yet. I was thinking about doing Ass Worship as a nod to Frank Frazetta. Are you familiar with my story, Ass Worship?
I kind of remember it.
About the glutoids that live up the girl's ass. She gets a black boyfriend.
No, I think I'm thinking of In My Asshole.
Oh, yeah. Inside an Asshole.
Inside an Asshole.
No, the first story in my Murder Stories for Your Brain Piece collection is called Ass Worship, and it's about a race of beings that live in a girl's asshole, and she decides to... she gets a black boyfriend that wants to fuck her in the ass, and it's a very, very sad story for the glutoids. As you can imagine, their world is... disrupted.
Devastated.
Possibly, yes. So, I guess that's it. I guess we'll see you guys next week. And as we get closer and closer to Horror Hound Weekend, Barbarian Month is in full effect, gang. We'll see you next time. Remember, keep reading.
Or listening.
All music featured on the Reading to Strangers podcast provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http://creativecommons.org/license/by/3.0/.